Hello, podcasters.
Hi.
Good afternoon.
Oh, another one here. I was about to say Casey and Chris here to introduce Left, Right and Center for another week, but we've got a foreign voice.
No, you don't.
Whose voice is it then? Someone that, because if it's not a foreign
I wouldn't call my voice foreign.
No, but I mean in terms of Left, Right and Center,
it's not that
of
foreign
sovereignty.
Either.
No. Look, that if you're not a foreign voice, it has to be either Casey or I throwing our voice.
Well, maybe it is.
Well, but then who is it?
Yeah, which one of us is it?
I don't know.
Explain yourself.
This is ridiculous. This is you explaining yourself while throwing your voice.
Look, if the listeners weren't already confused enough, having a podcast from the past in which they're listening to a show that's happening in the past, now in the future, you think they're not going to be confused?
Hold on. What?
This is a show that happened in the past.
Yes.
That the listeners are going to listen to in the future.
Yes.
Oh. So either you've just thrown your voice in unison with your own voice,
I'm like,
or it was me.
No. But I'm like Christina Aguilera. I can sort of do that vocal warble, only split it. In fact, what I've
done is stereo warbling.
I've edited the track, or maybe I've edited the track and put myself throwing my voice on there twice.
How very meta of you.
I suppose so. In any case,
what was in the show?
That's a good question.
If you're one of us, you would know what was in the show.
Yeah, but I'm asking on behalf of the listeners.
Oh, okay. So you're our conscience.
That's quite. Well, not our.
Not our conscience. Our
inner voice.
Yeah. Our inner presenter.
I'm your impartial spectator.
Okay. Well, we had lots of funky things on the show, didn't we, Casey?
We did.
No, sorry, we have lots of funky things on the show because that's in the
future.
We did, and also will. Yeah.
I think the way this show works is it's on. Continuous loop through the time.
It's tense-free, this show.
Yes. It's not, but there is tension. It's tense-free, but there's tension.
So it's not tense-free?
No, well, she doesn't mean, he doesn't mean tense in that sense.
This is Left, Right and Centre. We're talking about broadband, we're talking about motorised bar stalls crashing into things, we're talking about pineapples, we're talking about...
Men with thongs on their heads.
Rocks in their hands.
People with broken jaws.
Thongs in their heads and rocks in their hands.
Rocks in their bands.
I've done that a lot this week.
Oh, the youth these days. Who knows what they're up to.
But I think the biggest issue, Casey, is neither of those, but nuclear proliferation.
You mean nuclear proliferation?
Or nuclear.
Look, the jury's out on the pronunciation of that word.
Yeah, that's true. I can't figure it out.
Yeah, we're going to go to a jury trial to find out, but in the meantime, how about you listen to the show?
I concur, you should listen to the show.
You should listen to the show. That's what I said.
No, you said you could listen to the show.
I don't know, you're going to have to listen back and check it.
No, don't listen back, keep listening.
Student radio may contain coarse language and adult content. Listener discretion is advised.
Hello, guys.
Left, right and centre coming at you from every side.
Casey, as usual, joined by Chris and Matteo, as usual.
Hi there, I'm Chris again.
However, not joined by Tim this week.
Yeah.
But that's all right, because we've got a very special guest co-host with us today.
Yeah. Oh, it's great to be back on the radio.
We have the superstar of last year's Left, Right and Centre.
It's John. True, I was always the most popular.
And Jonathan Kempy Kemp, that's him.
I kind of feel like, you know, like Bert Newton or something, just kind of... resurrected from the dead. Everybody loves me.
Like every so often, they sort of wee you out for a guest appearance.
Exactly.
Like you wave to the fans.
And really, all it does is devalues the brand.
Oh no, we don't think that, John. We value you.
Yours or ours.
But
it may well devalue our brand.
The Broadcasting Standards Bureau could not keep me off, so I'm back here.
I'm back.
Yeah.
Maybe not for good, but at least for tonight,
no,
right?
Just for tonight. Yeah.
Before we get on with the festivities, I think maybe we have an obligation to explain Tim's absence. Give apologies.
Yeah, so was he eating or sleeping?
Who knows? Could be both. Probably half eating, half sleeping.
Like he ate a bit.
Took a nap.
Got a bit drowsy. Had a bit of a sleep. Woke up, was a bit hungry.
Yeah.
Finished the rest of the food.
Explain that Tim is either eating or sleeping at all times.
Well, I saw Tim earlier today and he was frowning a lot, so maybe
that's your sign of hunger.
He suffered frownitis.
Well, he was just before eating. You caught him in a rare state.
Yeah. So yeah, no Tim today, but we're still going to push on with our regular blend of news and current affairs and chat
Earthy
with
plan,
our
yeah.
yeah. including stories, including like this broadband story that's broken today about the government's tender to the new fibre to the well, they wanted a fibre to the node at first. It's become quite complicated. We'll talk about it later.
We're also going to have a chat about the whole fiasco with North Korea, and also touch a little bit on Mr. Obama's promise to denuclearize the world, or at least take steps to do that.
I don't think the world itself is going to be denuclearized. He's not going to remove the uranium.
Remove all the nuclon.
Got a giant uranium magnet.
And in fact, if you were...
Oh, he can do a lot of things.
And also, Matteo, if you were removing the uranium from the Earth, that would actually suggest he was building a nuclear program, probably, because that's the process typically.
Come on, guys, you're teasing me now. You're teasing me.
No, it's true. It's all true.
We are actually telling the truth.
Uranium magnet. He's a very interesting man. Mr. Obama can do a lot.
Anyway,
in the meantime, we thought we'd resurrect a segment from last year's Left, Right, and Centre.
In honour of John.
Since we've got John.
Yeah.
Bringing it back from the dead.
Yeah, one of John's favourite segments, I think.
This is why you were the superstar.
Well, if it's my favourite segment, it's because last year this was the only segment, basically. So, yeah, apart from the...
So, what are you going to bring us now?
I thought... Very special present here tonight that I do the news in 60 seconds.
Yeah. So we need a countdown for that, don't we?
Yeah. Do you have a countdown?
I do have a countdown. Here it is.
Is that what all those people in the other room are for?
Yeah, I've got them lined up there, ready just to do this. Yeah, it's going to be about 5 seconds.
We're live in studio.
Let's do it. Psyched up. Let's go.
Are we ready?
Let's try.
Let's go.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1!
The federal government has decided to create a new company to build its new broadband network after it became apparent that the old company created by the government in charge of such things, Telstra, sucks and costs too much to work with. The Reserve Bank has cut its rates to the lowest level in 49 years. Reports say that soon the banks will be paying us money. At the G20 dinner on the weekend, K-Rod apparently had the worst seat in that joint next to the Ethiopia and Spain. Apparently it was the boring end of the table, which does explain why Rod was there. Miss Universe apparently had a wonderful time at Guantanamo Bay this week. We visited the detainees' camps and saw the jails where they shower, how they recreate themselves, the movies, classes of art, books. It was very interesting, she wrote on her blog. All the ministers in the Zimbabwean government have been given new Mercedes. It's so astonishing I can't even make up a joke about it. New Zealand's murder rate is falling as part of the country's Shag a Sheep program. The US wants to take swift action against North Korea, but any action is unlikely, as Dmitry Medvedev and Hu Jintao think Kim Jong-il is pretty cute, saying, let little Kimmy make mistakes is the only way he'll learn.
Time's up.
Shag a sheep program, John? You want to shed some light?
Well, I have a tendency to get carried away with these expansion stories. But if you're aware of New Zealand, which is a couple of islands off the Australian east coast.
Isn't it a state of Australia? It is a state.
Soon to be, not yet.
Right, okay, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. It's a bit like Tasmania, really, if you can imagine that.
John, can I just point out that this sort of outlandish, perhaps extreme statement might be why certain regulatory bodies wanted to keep you off the air.
No, that's why you were making the big bucks last year, John.
It was, exactly. I was the highest paid person on Left, Right and Centre last year.
You were the John Laws of student radio.
I was, yeah. I think I went too far when I painted my headphones various colours. Yeah.
Well, okay.
I didn't have any gold paint, though.
Gold paint. Well, if you've got things you want to say about ours or John's performance during the show... Send us email at leftrightandcentre@live.com.au or write on our Facebook group.
Yeah, type it on our Facebook group, Left, Right and Centre, not Student Radio Left, Right and Centre, because that's John's group from last year, which is vastly inferior to ours.
That's the crap group.
That's true. Yeah, I can't really deny that.
We've got a vibrant listener base.
Student Radio at O-Week on Radio Adelaide 101.5 FM, as studious as you are.
The album there was Hissing Fauna, Are You the Destroyer? Of Montreal, and the song was Suffer for Fashion, and that's something I can identify with, I must say.
Yeah, ditto here.
Chris is always suffering for fashion. On to a story, well, loosely about the environment, more about a certain senator's...
Propaganda case. Let's not mince words here, it's what it is, right?
No, I was talking about the other senator. Okay. Here's what happened. Penny Wong, who's the Minister for Climate Change and Water...
And actually, can I just interject there? Yeah. She used to run around naked in my... because my mother was friends with.
Sorry,
her
where are you
parents.
Going with this?
I was just saying, when she was a little baby, she used to run around naked in their in the friend's yard, and my parents were like, "Oh, blah, blah, blah." And now they remembered that was Penny Wong. Just saying, personal connection.
There you have it, another Left, Right, and Centre exclusive, Casey.
Yes. Okay. So Penny Wong, former naked runner through Chris's associate's house.
No, yeah. Well.
Anyway, Penny Wong, she launched a competition for students in years 3 through 9 on Monday. So yesterday and a bit. To enter, they had to answer the question, what does climate change mean to me? Through mediums including, you know, short story, poem, songs, written form, artwork. She said when launching the competition that young Australians are very well informed when it comes to the issue of climate change. They understand that we need to take action now. Winners of the competition will be flown to Canberra in August to share their ideas with the Prime Minister and take home, amongst other prizes, the Nintendo Wii console along with some games and what have you. Runners-up win prizes, you know, MP3 players, book vouchers, that kind of thing. Judging criteria is based on creativity, originality, and attention to the theme. That seems like a fair enough competition, guys, yeah?
Are you being serious?
Well, so yeah?
The competition itself...
What does climate change mean to me?
No, but see, John, you're not the person who's being asked to answer it. These are, what is it, like years...
3 through 9.
So 3 through 9, yeah, so mostly primary school students, some high school students. You don't think... I mean, I think certainly there's a case to be made that this sort of thing is maybe an attempt to influence young people, possibly some of whom aren't in a position to actually understand the concepts fully.
Well, that's what Corey Bernardi thinks, Australian Senator Corey Bernardi. Sorry, John?
Sorry, I just like arguing. You keep going. Okay.
South Australian Senator, so federal senator in representing South Australia, he's slammed the competition. He was told he gave a statement to News Limited Adelaide Now saying, encouraging children to look after the environment is a laudable aim, but this seems to have more in common with the Ministry of Propaganda than the balanced education of our children. One can only guess that the only eligible children to win this competition will be those who conform to the Rudd government and Minister Wong's extreme political propaganda about climate change. So he evidently thinks that, I don't know if he thinks that climate change is not a real thing, or if he just thinks that the government shouldn't be pushing climate change.
See, yeah, the issue for me, I don't actually disagree with the Rudd government's policy on climate change whatsoever, but I don't think it should be taught as or encouraged. I don't think students should be encouraged to say what climate change means for them when they're not necessarily in a position to actually understand the concepts. I think it's trying to lead a particular line of intellectual thought, which maybe amounts to undue influence.
Don't you think this is encouraging teachers of such students to, you know, educate them about the issue so they can formulate their own views? This isn't just the kids are just going to go off and say what climate change means to them without any kind of background to
it. I hardly think the government's going to base their policy on what these year 3 through 9 students are going to say.
Might be surprised.
Well, can I just say that's the main problem I have with this, the idea of, well, all right, you're going to have these, 9-year-old kids to what, they're going to be, 14, 15, and they're going to be writing these essays or poems or short stories.
Paintings.
Yeah, whatever.
Writing the paintings, yes.
But really, to what end? I do appreciate that it is sort of symbolic of the modernisation of education. Like, there's a reason they don't, you know, they teach different things now to what they used to. But then I really wonder what's going to happen. These things are going to end up on the scrap heap, and I don't know who's going to come out much better from it.
Well, look, I mean, I don't think the claim was that... Actually, I've forgotten what you've said, so never mind that.
Encourage educators.
Yeah, look, I honestly don't think the aim will be anything other than to promote government policy, basically. I don't see how this can do anything else. You said 15-year-olds, but the fact is, I mean, like, if we go down to the bottom range, year threes, how old are they going to be? That's, yeah, what, 9, 10?
Yeah, probably 9 or 10 years old, yeah.
And people of that age, they're not going to have a critical understanding of the issues.
Sorry, but nobody's asking them to formulate a full policy document.
I'm not suggesting they should. Look, I'm not saying they should generate a full policy document. I'm saying they're not going to be able to, and their views are going to be shaped unfairly. They're going to get preconceptions about the issues that may not be correct at a young age because that's what they're going to be taught. They're not going to be taught the complex picture. They're going to be taught a simplistic view which will carry through, or could carry through, potentially, later in life. And that might not be justified.
But then, are we to believe that this issue is of sufficient importance to warrant some education at this stage of the children's sort of educations?
I'm not sure at year three level people are ready to be educated about that. But I think that should be high school at the earliest. I could see it at year 9, yeah. But... Not at year three.
So you're suggesting that if somebody say a year three came out and said, "What does climate change mean to me? Climate change is a left wing conspiracy designed to bring down the economy and put the Labor government in charge forever and ever." Do you think that they would win a Nintendo Wii?
No, But look, I don't think that's like. I don't think a year three is going to say that. Do you? I mean,
people do a lot of things for a Nintendo Wii.
That's not.
By the way, I love the way that's the prize.
No,
I think they win a Wii Fit as well. They also get flying to Canberra.
Irrelevant. Yeah, apparently
to Canberra, which incidentally is just having a $350 million airport upgrade.
Yeah, well, we're meant to believe that the main part of the prize is meeting with Mr. Rudd.
Mm-hmm.
But yep. Nintendo Wii,
and
that won't go
miss.
You get
your work published on the government website for climate
change. Can I just ask,
and who reads that, Casey?
The government.
How? Can I just ask, does anyone know how they're flown? Like, is it first class, business class? Economy class, because being flown to Canberra, I mean, not that I have a problem with flights, because I have been on planes, I plan to be on planes again, but if it's meant to be towards addressing the problem with climate change, shouldn't it be like a walk to your local RSL, where Kevin Rudd will come to, rather than flying them to Canberra, which will use up greenhouse gas emissions?
And
how does Kevin Rudd get to the RSL?
He's going to walk. Look, he's going to take a leaf out of the book of John Howard. John Howard walked every morning.
I miss that.
Kevin Rudd walks
that?
Every morning. He'll get to Adelaide eventually.
Yeah, well, they don't call him Kevin 24/7 for nothing.
Yep, good point. He could just pick a winner from Canberra.
So basically, Chris, you have a problem with every single part of this competition.
No, look, I think a Wii is a good prize.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'd kind of like to win.
We all like Wii's.
That's the one part that I have a problem with.
Yeah?
Oh, let's go to this. Okay. More stuff after this.
Cool.
We're talking about the national broadband plan of the government now. So from one government story to another. Specifically, a press conference that the government held this morning regarding putting out tenders for private companies to build a national fiber to the node
national broadband network. Yep.
Fiber to the node, that's to the end of every street, isn't it?
Yeah, basically, they have a series of connections at the end of every street, which then goes to individual households.
Okay.
And I'd like to point out, this is when we say they, we mean Kevin Rudd, obviously the Prime Minister, and Lindsay Tanner, who's finance but also communications minister.
No, Stephen Conroy.
Oh, Stephen Conroy. Oh.
Senator Stephen Conroy. Minister for Communications and the Digital Economy.
Oh, well.
The digital, really?
That is his title. There might be a third one in there too.
Excellent.
Congratulations,
okay. Stephen.
Yeah, so basically, what happened is that there was a bidding process. Sort of enacted. Four companies tendered bids. Telstra was one of them. Telstra's bid was actually rejected 15th of December last year. You know, pretty
day after
contentious.
My dog's birthday.
Thank you, John. Fun fact again. Pretty contentious because people thought that Telstra did have the sufficient existing infrastructure to impose this.
Well, they've got the infrastructure. No one else has infrastructure.
No one else has it. Telstra does. But they've been rejected. So basically, the rest of the proposals for the broadband network have been rejected.
Not satisfactory to the government, apparently.
Yeah, well, high standards. It was announced that, you know, a corporation will be created to oversee the construction of it, basically. And the government will be majority shareholders. You know, it's encouraging private investment, should I say. But the problem is that this project, it's expected to take 8 years. And in that time, the costs are expected to, get up to $43 billion Australian dollars?
I think that the time involved, 8 years, is kind of what we expected for such a big rollout of such a large amount of cable throughout the entire country underground. It's a big project. It's going to cost a lot no matter what.
But
it's a matter of, should the government be shouldering this? They want to take on 51% of this, 49% off to private company. Do we want them to be shouldering 47? I think it was 47 billion plus.
Yeah,
43.
Yeah.
Sorry,
42. I think
a lot of money.
A lot of money, right?
The problem for me is that, as I understand, it hasn't been individually costed. So, individual parts of the project. So, like different things. Like they have a plan to, for those people that aren't going to be covered by cable to the. What's the phrase?
Fiber to
the premises, right. They're going
to
use...
every house.
Yep.
Yeah, they're going to use satellite... they're going to have a satellite connection available to people in rural areas, for instance. But they haven't costed how much each individual part will cost. So even though they've said 43... At least not in a detailed fashion. So even if they said $43 billion, that's what they think the whole thing will... They haven't released the details of how much each bit will cost, which seems to me something of a problem, because we have no way of evaluating whether that's justified or whether the costing is accurate.
If you are wondering how the government plans to pay for this, they're going to take it from the Building Australia Fund, and they're going to actually issue a new bond, which is pretty interesting. It's called the Aussie Infrastructure Bond. That's the official name there.
Not the Australian Infrastructure Bond.
Aussie Infrastructure
What's
Bond.
What's the bet that K-Rod came up with that, with his whole kind of macho, I'm an Australian working bloke strategy?
But what I find interesting is that, sure, eight years is not, you know, unreasonable to roll out something like this, but Casey, you're perhaps the expert on this, relative to us anyway.
Relative.
Yeah, sure, it's all relative. After 8 years, when this is eventually finished, if it is, to what extent will this technology that they're actually constructing, to what extent will it actually be antiquated?
Well, okay, what we're looking at is, I think it's 100 megabits per second connection speeds in urban areas, in built-up areas, 12 megabits per second via satellite in rural areas. That's definitely a big jump on what we've got now. It's like 1 megabit per second, I think, is the average now across Australia.
And I think my understanding is that much of that's actually, like, most homes don't have 1 megabit per second on average. That's business connections, don't. And that's certainly a thing. And but
it's a matter of that. Yes, that's fantastically better now. There are countries that are already getting 100 megabits per second.
Yeah.
Well, I guess the next question from that is, if we set this up and it's, you know, world standard and it's working really well, is that something that we could then upgrade?
But the thing is it going to be world standard in 8 years' time?
Well, is that something that we could upgrade as, you know, as standards improve?
I think certainly it could, because, I mean, at least to a certain extent, because part of the reason, like, we actually have most of the wiring, or much of it is actually still going to be copper, or some of it anyway, but they're installing fibre optics cables, I think, so that they can then convert all of the copper ones to fibre later.
Yeah,
so
it's worth noting that these are fibre optic cables, you can't go faster than light.
Yeah.
So these are what
cannot go faster than light.
Yeah. Take notes. There.
Yeah.
Notes. It's as far as the cables, these are the best cables we can get without some sort of magic physics.
Yeah. I mean, let's make no mistake. This is really, really fast internet. Even if it takes 8 years, if you're talking internet that's what, approximately 100 times faster than what we have now. That's really fast internet. But still, the question is going to be raised.
Well, what can the internet do in 8 years?
What can I do now? $40-whatever billion is going to be spent. Is it going to be really valid spending of money? Is this a good use of the taxpayers' money?
And my answer to that is absolutely.
Absolutely?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, because the idea is that it's going to increase workplace productivity.
Yeah, increase the digital economy, as it were.
A digital economy of which Stephen Conroy is the head of.
Absolutely. There's more and more business being done on the internet.
Yeah.
Mm. Meetings, conferences being held over the internet.
And
we need.
I think the other point
speeds.
That especially, like, especially in developed economies, there's a trend towards intellectual property as a main driving force of the economy. You know, like Japan especially is making a lot of its exports through the sale of goods that basically isn't physical so much as virtual.
A service-based economy, right?
And I think this is certainly something that will help develop that further, or develop our potential to build on that.
Yeah.
Which is important because we're not as good at manufacturing as companies with cheaper wages.
The next question, which I guess comes from this, is after you've spent the $40 to $50 billion or whatever, and you've built the whole system, is this going to cost households more per month, to run that kind of broadband?
Oh, well, the costs are going down all the time, as I understand it.
But I think there's been some claim, like Malcolm Turnbull, I think, says that a household currently paying between $40 and $50 a month would end up paying $150 a month for broadband. I'm not sure where he gets his figures from, but I mean, if were that true, it might be a serious problem.
And is this something that you're forcing on people to pay?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think moving away from sort of the private debt that households have to take up, you've got also, the government having to shell out money from its own pocket for this, and, well, at least in the current
from
climate...
From its own pocket.
Yeah, well, that's not true. You're right. 8 years down the track, things are going to be different, but do we have the money to fund such a program?
Well, I think basically what suggests is that really it's... Much of this is unclear, I think.
That's the big question.
And it's something maybe we can come back to another time when more emerges, but...
Let's go to this.
You are now listening to the Universal Survival Guide on 101.5. Part 1, the letter F. To start at the beginning, or at least something approximating the earlier part of the middle, you will need to know that most words do not begin with the letter F. Now, that isn't to say that there aren't a great deal of words that begin with F, but certainly the percentage of words which begin with the letter F is less than 50, or at the very most, 67. 67 is a number, not a letter. You will certainly need to know the difference between these two things. A number is a value attributed to a number of things to let you know what number of things there are. For example, 5, 7, or even 9, whereas a letter is something you post to people in an envelope. The postal service is a means of delivering wedding invitations intended for your friends to a deranged derelict who yells at cars from a traffic island in Surrey, which is in a place called England. England is not America. It is not even Dorchester, although Dorchester can be found in England. Another thing which can be found in England is mobile telephones, which are devices used to distract teenagers from other teenagers, lest they procreate and begin to multiply. To multiply means to multiply one thing by another. Reindeer are a thing, and they can also multiply, but male reindeer lose their antlers at Christmas time. It is inadvisable to male reindeer. Other things which are inadvisable are keeping a vicious animal in a space which is insufficient to accommodate that animal, and the adoption of the perm as a male hairstyle. Adoption is another thing you will need to know about, but you will need to find another source for that information. There are lots of sources in the world, such as the internet or tomato, one of the more common sources. Neither of these sources are necessarily reliable, and only one is usually considered edible. The word edible sounds like audible, which is a word we use to describe how audible something is. For example, your radio is currently very audible, or if you are podcasting, your computer-based audio system is audible. Neither of these things are necessarily edible, but both are certainly tangible and possibly blue. This concludes part one of the Universal Survival Guide. If you would like to hear more tips for survival in the universe, you haven't been listening hard enough.
Do you realise? That's the Flaming Lips from their album Yoshimi Battles the Pink Robots. Matteo's waving his arms there.
Chris and I were with a friend today. She's a very big fan of the Flaming Lips, and she was saying that she wants a cat so she can name it Yoshimi. Isn't that sort of cute?
Oh, that's a great story. But I'm interested, guys. If you realise that Radio Adelaide would not be able to function if it was not for the fantastic donations, shall we say?
I didn't know that. I thought we were funded by a rich oil baron.
That's true. But we don't say that on radio. We just act as if you have to subscribe to Radio Adelaide because the rich oil baron, in case you haven't realised, is going out of business.
Yeah, he's
something about.
Some global something or other?
Yeah, some kind of crisis or something.
So he's been a little belligerent.
I'm not completely up to speed with it, because I've been living under a rock since we went off air last year.
Not literally, he hasn't got a job anymore.
You're still in Iraq?
Who?
Just
the rich oil baron.
Oh, we are.
No, just the US since last year, because I haven't really been catching up to speed.
Yeah, no, they are.
Still in Iraq?
Yeah.
Economy's still in trouble?
Economy's still in trouble, yeah.
I think actually...
Berlin Wall has come down.
Oh, wow. That's impressive.
The economy is actually in more trouble than it was last year, I think.
But if you want to remain more up-to-date than I have, then subscribing to Radio Adelaide is a fantastic idea. And if you want to do that, just give us a call during office hours on 8303-5000. 8303, is that still the number?
That is
still
the number.
8303-5000.
Actually, I can pretty much call you any time, just as long as
we can post you out.
1 and 6 in the morning. Just come in to our office.
Here. I think you can also do it online.
Yeah.
Can you?
Oh, you can certainly get the details on how to do it.
You can do that, yeah.
To
we've told you about this, John. No French.
Also, radio.adelaide.edu. It's $26 for concession or $52 for people who are normal. And this month, you could go into the draw to win a Fender Stratocaster Standard Series guitar with a Fender gig bag valued at a whopping $759.
And that's courtesy of Alan's music.
Sorry, 8303-5000 when people are here.
Do it, guys.
Now, this is the part of the show where I get to put you on the spot, guys. Are you ready?
Yeah.
No.
I'm...
Too bad, John. According to authorities in Ohio, a 28-year-old Ohioan, comically named Kyle Weigel, has been charged with drunk driving after he crashed his motorized bar stool. Police say that when they responded to a report of a crash with injuries, they found a man who had crashed a motorised bar stool powered by a deconstructed lawnmower. Weigel was admitted to hospital and charged with driving while intoxicated, having explained to police officers that he had driven the stool, which can go as fast as 30 miles per hour, after having consumed 15 beers. Weigel has reportedly pleaded not guilty to the charges and has requested a jury trial. Guys, do you think this stool is too cool for school?
30 miles an hour.
After 15 beers.
You know,
that's like 50...
It's 10 times the maximum speed of those buggies that elderly people often drive in.
Can I just say, if we want everlasting proof that the world is going down the tubes, how about this, where instead of rewarding this man's spirit of entrepreneurship
spirit
and innovation...
Spirit being the operative word, yeah.
Yeah, spirits of entrepreneurship, we're in fact, you know, going to try and jail him.
We're going to jury trial.
Well, I think if you designed a system where the bar still automatically took people home... After being at the bar, then
if it were going at 30 miles, John, they'd fall off. That's the trouble.
Obviously, you'd have to speed limit them, Chris.
Or have a seatbelt.
Seatbelt.
An Alice Springs driver pulled over by police for breastfeeding her infant son while driving was too drunk to submit to a breath test, police claim. The woman, who reportedly performed the act in the middle of town, was brought to police attention after she drove her station wagon from a hotel car park into the path of a patrol car. Police reportedly charged her with failing to provide a breath sample, driving while disqualified, driving an unregistered and uninsured motor vehicle, failing to give way, and driving with a child under 12 months old who was unrestrained. This is the second mother breastfeeding while driving and doing something inappropriate story we've had. Is this an epidemic?
I think it is certainly an epidemic. I am worried about a global problem of breastfeeding while driving, while doing inappropriate things, and I'm afraid, like, one day that's all we're going to be talking about on Rapid Fire News, and that scares me.
How do we fix it? Do we stop people driving?
Well, that and stupid criminals. Oh, I think this demonstrates...
I actually think we ban reproduction entirely.
What?
That was a mistake, but I'm going to move on anyway. One of two men charged with robbing a convenience store while wearing women's thong underwear as a face mask has been sentenced to 12 years in prison. According to prosecutors, the pair threw a large rock through the store window at 5 a.m. shortly after the clerk had opened the store. After brutally assaulting the store clerk and breaking her jaw, one of the robbers stole $100 from the cash register, while the other stole 37 packets of cigarettes. How would two thongs cover the criminals' faces?
It depends how big the woman wearing them was.
And also whether they were sheer thongs or solid ones. That's an operative...
Exactly,
like, you know.
Yeah, it does.
Casey, am I able to make a comment, or are you just going to cut us off again?
I will permit you to make a comment.
Well, I don't really have one, so press the thing.
A German woman has divorced her husband of 15 years because she was sick of him cleaning all the time, German media reports. Reportedly, the woman had put up with his penchant for doing household chores, tidying up and rearranging the furniture, but decided enough was enough when he knocked down and rebuilt a wall in their home which had become dirty. Court Judge Christian Kropp is said to have commented that, "I'd never had anyone seek a divorce for this." Has this woman let go of the catch of a lifetime?
Well, she's obviously not telling the whole truth about why she's divorcing the guy. Because anyone who gets up there and says that they're divorcing, you know, Mr. Fritzel or whatever his name is.
Well, look,
John, be nice.
John, I think this might be the real reason, because it's, like, for instance, if one of you broke the fourth wall during the show, I would, you know, like, have you off. That would be it. And it's the same situation in a marriage. If this was the fourth wall of the house, bang, you're gone.
But, Chris, after 15 years, don't... Is that all?
It wouldn't mean anything to me.
15 years of lovely, sparklingly clean marriage, and it has to come to this.
Exactly. No dirt whatsoever. That's disgusting.
Boring, really.
A British academic claims to have proven that Robin Hood was not as popular as previously thought, discovering a note in the margins of an ancient history book which is critical of the world's most famous hooded, tight-wearing bandit. The marginal critic, a 15th-century monk, reportedly accused Hood of, quote, infesting Sherwood and other law-abiding areas of England with continuous robberies. Anonymous commenter KJPHOTOG adds that, "Let's not forget he was a socialist too, stealing from the rich to give to the poor. Sure he wasn't a Democrat? Next thing they'll come up with that he's related to Obama on his mother's side. Who cares?" Most of KJPHOTOG's comments, I'm not going to pronounce that, comments are inane drivel, but he finishes with a legitimate question. Who cares?
Well,
good question. Let's move on.
I care about one thing he says, which, I mean, the comment, the thing about perfectly law-abiding areas being robbed. Like, if there are robberies in perfectly law-abiding areas, they're not perfectly law-abiding. That's stupid. That monk was a crazy monk.
Wow.
Crazy monk.
For eloquence, I think that Chris gets extra points.
A Japanese pop star dressed as a pineapple while filming a music video has been robbed, Swedish police say. Police spokesman Bo Paulson says camera equipment worth $2,500 was stolen after the pineapple-clad singer Hideki Kaji was left alone with the equipment while the crew went for a break. He's now been left with a cut lip and without a dental implant. What sort of music video calls for a man dressed as a pineapple?
A very fruity one, that's what.
Best damn video, music video around, I'd say.
Doesn't it?
It's a fantastic story.
Giant pineapple people picturing.
I think John also gets extra points for relevancy.
I mean, does their face poke out the top, like in the green bits?
You hire a film crew to film you dressed
singing and dancing in a pineapple.
And what they do is they go...
And where does the self-respect go? At what stage do you think your career's at if you've gotten to the stage where you're dressed as a giant pineapple?
Gardening camera equipment.
Final thing I'd like to say is if you want to incapacitate John, clearly...
Tell him a story about a pineapple.
Pineapple is
the
way to go.
Pineapple is ananas in French. It's incredible.
Yeah, look, it's spelled like bananas, really.
It is. It's outstanding. And you know what banana is in French?
Is it pineapple?
It's banana.
Interesting. Moving on. Gus, the dog of Australian ambassador to Italy, Amanda Vanstone, who you may recall bit the hand of the Pakistani ambassador to Italy, has struck again. To help diffuse growing tensions between Australia and Pakistan, Gus was subsequently required to wear a muzzle. But when Italian police visited Ms. Vanstone's residence, Gus attacked them again, despite the muzzle. According to the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade, neither of the incidents in which individuals were bitten by Amanda Vanstone's dog have affected the work of the Australian embassy or Australia's relation with foreign countries. Muzzling Gus failed. Is capital punishment the only practical solution?
Definitely. I mean, look, clearly you can't deal with this dog in a reasonable, rational way, and it keeps doing things that are wrong. And it's damaging Australia's reputation, and just like I think we should shoot Break It Down on Thursday presenter Gus, shoot the dog.
Well, for me, the most upsetting part of this story is finding out that Amanda Vanzo's dog is not, in fact, called D-Fat, as I'd originally been led to believe. But in fact, it has a completely rational name.
Yeah, well, can I just say I agree as well, because I'm the animal lover of the group here. Mm. But, of course, that love of animals, that doesn't extend beyond cats and ducks. And I specifically, especially love ducks.
You draw the line.
You don't
dogs.
Like dogs?
No, not a dog lover.
Like, even if he did love dogs, like he was in the film Must Love Dogs or something, not that he is, I'd claim that he might be able to say that the dog has, now committed a violent act and should not be treated as a, its rights have been rescinded,
yeah,
I think.
Shoot the dog, put it down.
That's all for Rapid Fire News for today. But that last story about Amanda Vanstone's dog has reminded me about something I've been festering about all week. I'm angry, guys. I'm angry.
You're angry, Casey. Tell us why you're angry.
You're pissed
Casey.
Off?
I'm pissed off at Gus. Host of Break It Down with
You're
Gus
shooting
and Miles.
Sparks.
Thursday night. I'm shooting Sparks. He hosts Break It Down on Thursday nights. He said some unflattering things about me last week on the show. Take a listen to this.
I was going to say a few nights ago on Left, Right, Center, one of the other shows here on Break It Down, young Casey has made a bit of a power play, and he's actually attempting to take over the entire student radio team. So we all need to be on our have our wits about us,
sure.
In a sense, because he is. Yeah. Seriously, he's tried to kick off Illuminati. He's had a go at Blue Monkey Jazz.
Yep,
we've got to bunker down.
He's got his own Maria's show as well.
Yeah,
he's keeping on him. He's out the back now. Actually, yeah. I think he comes here fair often.
I went out before at the front. Someone's let the air out of my tires.
Really?
My bike.
God.
And he was out there before. So I don't know. I don't know what's going on. Anyway, I have to have a word to that kid. But he's got a great show. It's on Tuesday night's Left, Right, and Center. Check it out.
Gus. Certainly, Gus did say something that was right, and that's this is a great show, yeah. I mean, without question.
Well, I mean, this is why I'm angry. First of all, it's not Left, Right, and Centre on Break It Down. It's clearly Break It Down on Left, Right, and Centre. Secondly, I've only ever publicly stated ambitions to take over Illuminati and Break It Down with Lewin and Bryce.
And you wanted to be, like, regional caretaker for Blue Monkey Jazz when it was just Blue Jazz.
Yeah, well, yeah, but they've got their monkey back, so that's okay. I'm happy with Maria's show. Never planned to take over Gus and Miles' show. Well... And until this little bout of insolence from Gus. Thirdly, how dare Gus try and accuse me of sabotaging his bike? I'm no saboteur.
Yeah, I can confirm right here on the air that at the time when the tires were let out,
the alleged Casey tampering.
He was in a sex shop buying pornography. I can confirm
that's
that
not
right
true.
Now. No, it's 100% true, Casey. You weren't at the scene of the crime, you're completely innocent.
That's not true. I have a much better cover story.
That's not true, because he was in that apartment with the five prostitutes having a Nazi sex orgy.
Why are you making up like... Okay, I'm going to put you all on notice too. Here's what actually happened. I remember this night very well. Very well, actually. It was a chilly night. I remember this because I forgot my jacket. I was quite cold. Anyway, the point is, I went out the front of the studios. I was leaving the studio on a Thursday night, just before the show, their show had begun. I see Miles standing outside near a hunched over a bike. I assume he's, you know, tying it up, locking it up. Maybe I thought it was his bike, tying a lock to it, putting lights on or something. I don't know. Maybe he's just meant for a ride. I'm going to suggest that Gus take a look at his partner.
Look in his own backyard first.
Have a look at his own backyard before he starts flinging accusations at other Radio Adelaide programs.
Before he throws shit over our fence, look in his own.
Yeah, but can I just say, if he wants to look in his own backyard, maybe you should make sure that federal ministers aren't running around in it naked.
Of course.
It
happened,
Chris. When she was a child and there were other children running around too. Like, I'm not...
Don't try and explain yourself.
Don't try and justify
it. So this was part of some kind of orgy?
No, John, it wasn't part of an... No. There was no orgy. You guys are...
Anyway, the point is, Gus, watch yourself.
Yeah.
Let's go to this.
Live from the North Terrace studios of Radio Adelaide. Left, right and centre newsflash.
A new phenomenon has arisen in a hilly terrain near the Swiss-German border. But rather than the benign, peculiar crazes that are normally associated with this part of the world, namely cuckoo clocks and fiscal prudence, this is a far more sinister, troubling one. Hiking, but not just any form of hiking. Naked hiking. Authorities in the canton of Appenzell-Innerrhoden plan to introduce fines to people caught hiking nude. However, there has as of yet been no elaboration as to how severe the fines are to be, or precisely how naked the person must be to be considered breaking the law. The phenomenon itself is apparently born from the three-body culture that has proved popular in Germany, one of many recent and not-so-recent trends smashing the myth of Germany as a regressive place. Melchior Lusser, Justice Minister in the southeastern canton, has stated that we, presumably meaning the fun police, were forced to introduce legislation against this indecent practice, and of course here I would count that this is strictly in the eye of the beholder, before the warm weather starts. When pressed further on his opposition to the practice, Lusa responded, "The point is, many children visit our mountains in the summer." When asked her opinion on the matter, Sue Dunham, spokeswoman for the Association of Crusaders, Puritans and other right-minded, morally inclined folks, better known of course by its acronym ACPRMTH, stated that, "It's hard to read much into this really. We at ACPRMTH have known for a while that the Swiss Germans are a little funny like that. We suspect it's the mountain air." Questioned if this meant that the organisation condoned the spate of nude nature walks, Dunham hastened to add, "No, of course not. We firmly believe that any activity that causes moral indignation is as bad as an actual crime. You know, moral decay society and all that." Suggestions that the naked hiking craze began as the result of a good solid night's drinking by local youth have been dismissed as folly, and reports of the popular MTV program Jackass filming in the area have been further dismissed as fanciful coincidence.
Now, most people would agree that poverty is not a good thing.
Not really. No.
I think poverty is a good thing. I think individual responsibility, it's their own fault they're in that situation, so they can get themselves out of it.
Excluding Chris's
character
opinion.
Character building, that's
Chris is an outlier. Student poverty, also not a good thing if you don't like poverty. The Student Representative Council at the Adelaide University, SRC, are holding a protest to highlight the student poverty issue, issues with lack of youth allowance support for students in the independence tests. Some argue aren't strong enough, too strong, sorry. So not enough people qualify for youth allowance that do. The National Union of Students have come up with statistics saying that 1 in 2 students say their study is adversely affected by financial stress, and 1 in 8 students miss a meal regularly because of lack of money. Head on down. This is a protest. They're having a sleep over on the Bath Smith Lawns at Adelaide Uni on the 23rd of April. Head on down there. Bring your PJs. Bring your sleeping gear, and camp out on the Bath Smith Lawns to support the cause. They'll give you free dinner, free breakfast, entertainment, and you'll send the clear message that students deserve fair income support.
Casey, if I'm allowed to bring sleeping beer, I will go.
Beer does make me sleepy.
It's very good stuff. Nuclear non-proliferation has been brought to the fore again recently after a North Korean missile at 11:30 a.m. local time on Sunday. North Korea launched a missile called...
you want me to help you here, John?
Kwan Myong Song.
Number 2.
Number 2. This is the second one. There was a Kwan Myong Song before that. On top of an Unha rocket. The Unha rocket uses much the same technology, I guess, if you're familiar with the Taepo Dong 2 ballistic missile. Theoretically has the range to reach Sarah Palin.
In Alaska.
Yeah, and then it looks so close to Russia from there.
So far, the reports concerning the success of the mission are from the North Korean media who report that the mission was a success, of course. They always do that, even that shitty little one last year. And the satellite was put into orbit. The only other report comes from Japanese government who say that the first stage of the rocket landed in the Sea of Japan as expected. The issue here is that this same kind of technology is what would be used to send a nuclear missile to cities as far away as Alaska. I think they said that Darwin could be reached. Obviously, Japan's in a bit of shit here.
Mm. Well, obviously,
so this was interpreted by the US and Japan as being perhaps an act of provocative war.
And perhaps South Korea, John. Don't forget South Korea and all this.
Well, South Korea could probably be hit by some kind of atomic hand grenade, so...
I know, but they'd still be slightly concerned by a missile.
Obviously, they'd be concerned. I'm glad I'm not in South Korea.
I think, really, it's a serious issue, because even though clearly they're launching a communication satellite, it means, assuming it was a success, which we can't be sure of, it is potentially a serious security threat to Japan and the US, and more importantly, perhaps it gives them some sort of bargaining power. Like, as a deterrent thing, if the US and Japan feel that North Korea can strike them, or, you know, like, if John McCain had become president and there was risk of North Korea being able to hit Sarah Palin, the vice president, he'd be less likely to take action or sanctions against North Korea, theoretically, because the North Koreans, you know, that's a serious problem.
It's going to make other nations tiptoe around the North Korea.
But why don't the North Koreans have the right to defend themselves from threats, be they Sarah Palin or not?
Well, of course, if
other countries are allowed to have nuclear weapons, why can't North Korea?
Of course, they have the right to use it, but the question is whether they're going to... Okay, they don't have the right to use it, they have the right to have it, but the question is whether they're going to use it.
It's about how they get... Yeah, no...
They're not probably going to use it.
Minimal chance. Its use really is more as a deterrent. It's the ability to threaten to use the warhead or, you know, missile should another country attack them. It's a defensive ploy. But, Casey, the point you made about whether they have a right to have nuclear weapons, the argument with the Non-Proliferation Treaty, theoretically, is that all of the states except the five, which is the US, China, France, Britain and Russia...
The states, incidentally, we set up the treaty.
Yes, exactly. No other countries should be allowed to have nuclear weapon technology. Now, obviously, there are a few others that do... and aren't part of that agreement, which is Israel,
Pakistan,
India. Yep. And but the problem with it is how can they justify saying it's okay for us to have it if others can't?
Well, this is a fairly, you know, obvious two-faced idea from the world's major powers, and it's not one that you can really defend from a fairness point of view.
Yeah. Now,
but it is in the best interest of these five powers and the powers that already do have the weapons to be able to stop other countries using it.
Yeah. And that's, you know, like, the force that carries is a compelling argument, I suppose, in real terms. I'd like to briefly make a point on behalf of Tim McCarthy, the absent presenter on Left Right Centre.
Yeah, the fallen.
Who just wanted to say that he thought the Non-Proliferation Treaty was a complete joke, basically. And as John pointed out, that it's a ridiculous imposition. The moral basis for it. The moral basis for it is quite ludicrous. And also, it's not terribly effective. There's no real way of stopping a country, or at least the Non-Proliferation Treaty itself doesn't provide a means of stopping a country developing nuclear weapons should they want to. The means they do that is action by other countries, regardless of the NPT.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm. Well, there's some sort of segue to this issue, just if we can quickly touch upon it. Last Sunday in Prague, Barack Obama gave a speech actually outlining his policies on nuclear non-proliferation. His speech, you know, dealt with a couple of points, said that the US is committed to a long-term goal of global disarmament, not, you know, denuclearization, as I previously erroneously said. He asserted the right of the US to maintain a nuclear deterrence arsenal, again touching on perhaps the frailties of the NPT. And the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty. He actually declared his intention to get the Congress to sign this Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty, which is going to be very difficult indeed. I foresee a lot of problems with the Congress signing something like this.
And the thing is, even if they do, the Nuclear Test Ban Treaty doesn't come into practice unless I think the 42 annex countries all ratify it, and that includes countries like China, Israel, and that's the main problem. Israel are not going to ratify a Nuclear Test Ban Treaty because they feel threatened by countries on all sides, you know, Iran especially. And that's just not a realistic proposition.
Yeah, and furthermore, finally, Obama, you know, declared his intention to continue developing the proposed the missile defense shields in the Czech Republic and in Poland. Interesting, he gave the speech in the capital of the Czech Republic.
and he announced a new push to secure all the vulnerable nuclear material in the world within the next 4 years, which is a pretty lofty goal, a venerable one, and well, admirable one, I think.
Like the Cold War all over again, isn't it?
It's admirable, like, but the trouble with acquiring all the... You know, I mean, like, is that they don't know where a lot of the stuff in former Soviet republics are. Like, there are quite a few warheads in Ukraine that they've actually lost track of.
There's a lot in Central Asia where no one's really sure where they are, and that they're not very well guarded. They're not at all secure. Apparently, the Russians can just come by and pick them up whenever they want.
To lose one warhead could be described as unfortunate.
Yeah. I don't think the Russians coming along and picking them up is the problem. It's if non-state actors, you know, like the Russian mob, for instance, comes and pick it. I mean, the Russian mob, if they pick up a nuclear warhead, that will sell it to anyone.
As if the Russian mob weren't scary enough. Phil, John, you sound anguished.
Sell them to everyone?
Anyone. Or maybe not the Yakuza. They might not sell it to rival mobs.
To rival mobs, yeah. It's probably... Just,
it won't
just
hold the world hostage. That doesn't
probably. Just,
I don't think. Well, look, I don't think the Russian. I don't
maybe
think,
not.
Anyway,
we are going to wrap up this discussion.
I think that's a fantasy scenario.
Yeah. Right, discussion
here's
over.
Here's how you be assertive, Mateo. Let's do this.
This is student radio at Adelaide Uni on 101.5.
The show's almost over. I think it's almost 1 a.m. So we need to wrap up and get out of here.
Skedaddle.
We need to say cheerio for another week. Regrettably, with heavy hearts
and heavy minds.
In honour of Tim, I think we'd better say that what we're about to do is extraduce ourselves or outroduce ourselves.
Outroduce ourselves.
We know
I'm
Tim
fighting
loves
for
that
outrages.
Phrase. I like both. I use either or both. I've been Chris.
I've been Casey, outroducing myself on behalf of myself.
On behalf of Tim, I'll extroduce myself. Extroduce myself as Mateo.
I am John and will remain so.
Yeah,
forever and ever.
Yeah, by the way,
that's why we love him.
Yeah, thanks a lot for coming on the show, John.
Yeah, John, it's been really good to have you here. I think I can say now we'd like to replace Tim with you for the rest of the.
Been great to be here.
No,
but...
John, you can be one of the hosts Left, Right, and Centre on Thursday nights.
Because we've got Thursday nights now.
Yeah.
So we're going to offer you. Yeah, no, Illuminati's been kicked off. We're going to offer you, I think, a hosting position on.
Yeah.
Thursday night, left, right, and centre.
I kind of like to take Thursdays off, John.
With perhaps, you could do that. And then I think Chris and Tim, you might like to take Gus and Miles.
Oh, no, well, I'd quite like to go with John.
Oh, okay. Well, I'd like to go with John too. So maybe you could
actually
nice
John. Baby. I've been there.
So we're going to work this out off air, I think. But we might put an announcement up later.
That was amazing.
Was it?
No.
That was the show, anyway. That was left, right, and centre. It was featuring, you know, Tim wasn't there, as we said during the show many times, and I think we benefited from his absence.
I think that's a little mean, Chris.
It is a little mean, but sometimes the truth hurts. Casey Briggs, sometimes the truth hurts.
Does it hurt too much, though?
Well, it's the truth.
It doesn't help, though. It doesn't help anything.
No, it does, because we identify that he's the problem, we isolate it, and we extract it.
Like a tumour?
We eliminate the tumour.
Or oil on the ocean.
Timothy Tumor McCarthy, that's his name.
Timothy Oil Slick McCarthy?
That is a terrifying thought.
Mm. So we're joined by that third voice from the intro. We've worked out what the voice was. It was, in fact, Gemma from Illuminati hiding under the table with a microphone.
And throwing her voice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't sound like this. I have quite a masculine voice.
And,
Well, we thought while she was in the studio, we'd interview her about...
Because about the station and about her life in general, because we decided that the one thing that the Left, Right and Centre podcast wasn't doing was providing you with an insight.
Behind the scenes
look at Radio Adelaide.
This is a special feature.
This is a new special feature. Each week we're going to do something different that gives you some sort of new impression of how...
Don't be hasty. This is the first idea we've had.
Each week you're going to interview Gemma.
Maybe.
Okay, well, anyway...
Most likely. Let's
get things underway, shall we? What's the first question?
Well, first question there, Gemma. What's your favourite thing about working at Radio Adelaide?
The cheese.
The cheese?
Mm. There's no cheese here.
How is the cheese?
Soft.
That's all? Soft?
Yeah. Soft and delicious.
What's your favourite thing about working with me?
Working with you?
And me?
I don't know. I don't really enjoy very much of my time spent with either of you.
Then who's your favourite left, right and centre?
Tim. Now that he's been isolated in some sort of tumour, I feel a bit of pity towards him. I feel I should look after him.
No, but look, I don't think someone you pity can be your favourite. Really? Like, realistically, you're not motivated by maybe someone, like, for him.
Well, you're a mother at heart.
I am a mother at heart. Maybe someone you pity can't be your favourite.
But you were saying you were motivated by pity. You felt pity for him, and that's why you liked him. That doesn't make sense.
No, it's not why I like him. It's just an additional feeling.
Okay.
Gemma?
Yeah?
Who's in better shape, you or me?
You.
And why?
Maybe, I don't know.
Look, I think that's true, but it kind of depends on what shape you're going for.
Does it?
I mean, you don't think so, Casey?
No, I think Gemma's going for pear-shaped. Maybe Tim's going for pear-shaped.
Tim, everything Tim touches is pear-shaped.
He's especially, saying Tim's especially been touching the pears. Me? He's not going to be happy about that accusation.
Maybe that's why he's your favourite left, right and centre.
You are happy?
Is that why?
I'm not saying I'm unhappy. That'd be mean.
Now, Gemma, I really quite like your dress. And
thank
I'd like to know where you got it. The garbage bin, maybe?
Oh, harsh words.
But I'm genuinely interested, because if there is a cache of dresses like that in the garbage bin,
I don't know where you're going with this.
Nor do I.
We just want to know where you got your dress so Chris can get one of his own.
It was a reasonable guess, I think.
The garbage bin.
The garbage bin.
You're saying I look like I dressed myself in a garbage bin?
No, not dress yourself in a garbage bin.
Well,
dress yourself
fair,
from a garbage
dress
bin.
It does have a hole in the back from earlier on today when I fell over. Well, not so much.
Are you sure
over.
It wasn't from when you found it in the garbage bin because someone chucked it out because it had a hole in it?
Harsh words.
And a follow-up question. How can you live with yourself dressing yourself from clothes in garbage bins when you have the financial means not to do that, and there are other people who maybe, you know, can't really afford
maybe
to buy new clothes?
Maybe I don't have the financial means to not dress myself from a bin.
You can make pancakes. You make pancakes.
Yeah, I can't wear pancakes.
No, but I'm saying if you can afford to buy pancake ingredients, you can afford to buy dresses.
Sugar's $2 for a kilo.
Sugar is a rarity. It's a luxury. You know, like, that's why all the pirate ships, sugar's a currency almost.
Are you sure about that?
Yeah.
Where's your proof?
Well, last time, you know how they kidnapped an oil tanker? Not
yeah.
kidnapped, they took it over. They also, half of that was carrying, half of its cargo was sugar.
I didn't hear about that. That's interesting.
No, it's the unknown side. Yeah, they kept
that
it on the down low.
A dangerous combination of things to be carrying together. Because if you don't want the oil to contaminate the sugar or the sugar to contaminate the oil.
Mm. No, you have like.
I would rather, if I was in carrying some kind of tanker, I would have, you know, half sugar and half, you know, half pancakes or half lemon juice, so that when they combine, they make something delicious.
Really?
So if they can contaminate it, everything's good because you can still sell them. Mark up the two things separately at a higher price together.
But where would they be cooked?
Where would what be cooked?
The pancakes you're making from your tanker.
Who said you were making
well,
pancakes?
The reason they're contaminated is because that ship has crashed into a ship containing flour, eggs and milk.
Yeah. Where's the flames?
From the fire of two ships crashing into each other.
The thing is, you have to. The trouble with that is you need to control it. I mean, I don't think you'd make very even or delicious pancakes from the fire you get from two ships.
Look how easy they are to make.
But you'd make a lot of pancakes, so you'd be able to pick out the bit that was crap and find the good
bits.
It's
not very effective, though. Like, it's a waste of all those ingredients.
It'd be effective, but inefficient.
That's a good point.
I don't know if you'd end up with a pancake, more a pan casserole.
It wouldn't even be a casserole, because a casserole is like a sort of rectangular shape and it's got filling and stuff. You wouldn't get it'd just be like a splatter.
A splatter of pancake.
But
it'd be in the ocean as well. The problem would be getting to the pancake, I think, because most of the seamen on board would be drowning.
Is there the seamen?
Yeah. Or women? Seamen or women?
Oh, seamen.
Sorry.
Okay.
That would be a really disgusting pancake.
You had to go and make it dirty, didn't you?
Look, okay, I'll make it undirty. I think, is there a nursery rhyme that's about that? Like pancakes made in the sea that are just splatters? And it goes something like splatter cake, bake me a cake?
No, you've just made
splatter
it
cake,
up.
Bake me a cake.
What?
Splatter cake, bake me a cake.
Inanimate objects can't make, they don't reproduce asexually.
Maybe they do.
I've never seen a cake give birth
to
another cake.
Well, actually, if it's asexual, it doesn't really give birth. It just
morphs.
Not so much morphs as grows to its maximum size.
It multiplies,
though.
It splits in two, yeah. Mm. So that's not really giving birth.
I've never seen a cake grow in size.
Have you ever seen a single-cell organism split?
Yes.
You no, you have, but have you?
Surely that would then make two half cell organisms.
Saying you've never seen an inanimate object, but whatever, but you haven't actually seen...
But a single cell, if a single cell organism splits, you've just got two half cell organisms?
No, I know, but no, you've never seen incorrect. It. No, you have two single cell organisms. Mm.
That would be a double cell organism to start with.
No, because it's split. It's two
Look,
separate.
If you halve one, you get one half. If you halve two, you get one.
It doesn't work like that, Casey.
Because for a brief period of time, it's an overlap.
And then they're whoop, two.
Is it mitosis?
Mitosis, that sounds right.
Yeah, but no, there's two. There's
Osmosis?
Meiosis. No, there's no. Meiosis and mitosis, and I can't remember which is which, and I really should know
I think
know
it's
that.
Meiosis.
Ooh, but you I just think. Said you thought it was mitosis.
I don't know, it sounds right. Osmosis is completely different.
Osmosis That's is the absorption of a liquid.
The diffusion of water. No, because osmosis is water specifically. Mm. Osmosis is the diffusion of water across a membrane, whereas diffusion is a liquid, so it's a specific term.
It's with the voltage gradient as well. That's exciting.
Yeah. And that's pretty much all the science I remember.
This interview's gone off the rails.
It has gone off. Well, that's
off the
thing.
Wall, off tap.
Yeah, it has gone pear-shaped. Or was it pear-shaped to beginning? Certainly the subject we were interviewing was pear-shaped. Our guest was to begin with, but...
I don't know if I'm comfortable with calling Gemma pear-shaped.
You're pear-shaped right here. And dressed in rubbish clothing.
Casey, you started this. Don't lay the blame on me. I just continued what you were saying.
No, you prompted me for a shape, and that was the first thing that came to mind.
Yeah, so it was your fault. I just said, you know, depends what shape we're talking about here. And I was actually going to think, I was going to insult your shape.
Well, what's my shape?
Sort of like broken matchstick, maybe?
Broken matchstick. That's not even a description.
What does that mean? I'm skinny and deficient.
It means you're so skinny that... You were walking along, and then you snapped, I guess.
But you wouldn't have snapped, imagining the matchstick upright, you wouldn't have snapped vertically.
Lengthwise.
Snapped in the middle, like horizontally.
Yeah, in the middle. He was wearing his backpack, and the weight was too much, and...
Yeah, and so his head's, like, the
Are
bit
Are calling
that
me a mutant, deformed
I'm just saying,
troll?
I didn't
no,
say you were a troll.
No, matchstick. I don't know where you got troll from. That yeah. sounds insulting.
All right, well...
And broken matchstick doesn't.
Okay, well...
Gemma, thank you for coming in today.
It's been very
it's been
lovely
awful.
To have you. I've enjoyed it.
I haven't. I've found it quite insulting.
I've enjoyed other things more than I enjoyed this.
I had fun. If you'd like to listen to the show real time, you can. Tuesdays at midnight. Midnight
That's,
to 1.
That's South Australian local time.
South Australian local time, 101.5 FM, also yep. if you're in South Australia. And if you would like to leave us a comment and say how much you'd like us to have Gemma back, or how much you wouldn't like us to have Gemma back, don't do that.
Or just maybe with questions to ask Gemma.
Yeah, everyone write in with questions yeah. for me.
So you can email us at...
And we'll ask them to her.
You can email us at student radio. No.
Not student radio. No, that's not right.
At left, right and centre at live.com.au. Or you can read our blog and leave us a comment there on studentradio.wordpress.com. Or you can Facebook us, Casey.
You can Facebook us on left, comma, right and centre.
We should have had an Oxford comma there.
Yeah.
No.
Gemma, but you've said you admitted that I was right about the Oxford comma.
I admitted...
The Oxford comma, for reference people, is where you have, like, a phrase. So say left, right and centre. And the non-Oxford comma way is to do left, comma, right and centre. The Oxford comma way is to do left, comma, right, comma, and centre.
I accept the Oxford comma, except in titles. I think it's unnecessary in a title, especially one as short as left, right, and centre.
But...
It's unnecessary in the title.
Okay,
I think we need to lengthen our title, then.
We do need to lengthen our title.
It's left, right, centre, and Gemma. Sometimes.
Would you like to join us when we murder Madison?
Please don't murder Madison.
Well, it's
just
she's
the one incriminated gonna, me
she's
by
the one that's
going to
set herself on fire.
She's setting herself on fire?
Well,
she did mention it.
She said she would. She said she yeah. wouldn't if someone called up, and no one called up. So now she has to set herself on fire.
That will be fun. Just for reference,
I can't
guys,
wait for that.
Madison is Gemma's co-host on Illuminati, which is on Thursdays at midnight.
Listen to us.
It's almost as good as our show.
I wouldn't say that. I'd say it's quite good. It's better than all of the other shows except ours, but there's still some gap between the two.
That was insulting everyone.
Except us.
Except us.
That's all we've got time for, I'm afraid.
Nice having you.
Nice having you, yeah.
Everyone, you're lovely.
Everyone, you're lovely. And,
Especially you, Gemma.
Oh, shucks, I'm chuffed.
No, I mean, I do. I enjoy pears. They're delicious fruit.
Stop calling me a pear.
Sorry, once I caught... once I stop, I can't
pop
that.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.